listening to this cast recording if I'm not getting Audra McDonald?
This is the worst score I've ever listened to in my entire life. I'm so sorry to Lynn Aaron's Stephen Flaherty, but what were you thinking?
A questionable accent after a questionable accent. Andy Carl. Why couldn't they find an Italian to play this role?
It's just like, it's really good stuff.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to After Broadway, the podcast where we deep dive into anything and everything musical theater from the comfort of my car. I'm Tara.
I'm Stefania.
And in today's episode, we're back with another composer series. This time we're talking about Aaronson Flaherty because I feel like they are the it duo right now. And I mean right now because they've had like a reunion concert, ragtime reunion concert a few weeks ago on Broadway. And they've recently celebrated their 40th or 41st anniversary as a duo. So now is the perfect time to talk about them and their shows.
Yes, we decided to maybe focus on what we like to call greatest hits plus Rocky. Is the little like collection of shows we picked. We picked five shows that we all like listened to all the way through in preparation for today to talk about that kind of take us through their entire career.
But even saying that, like greatest hits plus Rocky, like some of these did not last for very long on Broadway. And then some of them have had like incredible like regional success. So it's very interesting to look at them in comparison to like some other people that we've done.
Absolutely. For me, mm-hmm. And let's just dive right in. For me, the one thing that really struck me as I was listening to them is I don't feel like they have a distinct style. There's nothing, you know, when I hear one of the music, as beautiful as some of it is, there's mm-hmm. nothing about it that is grabbing me. It's like, oh, that's Aaronson Flaherty.
Right. You know? No, it's very true. Like, every show kind of has its own style, its own sound. And normally when we've looked at a composer, you can hear like an underlying theme or like a few notes that sound kind of the same. And here I only noticed it like a couple times, but it wasn't very obvious. You have to like really listen and dig for it to hear that these shows are done by the same people.
They're truly chameleons, I feel. And in some ways that's wonderful that they can kind of immerse themselves in any songwriting style, in any story, and write a successful or semi-successful or workable score.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't know. I want more. So I wanted to feel something more like personal mm-hmm. from these shows, something more distinct, something more special. And I feel like I was missing that through their entire body of work. That's not to say like each show individually does not have that specialness, but their entire body of work is not, I don't know. There was just something I was like, I wanted it to be more distinct and it wasn't.
Yeah. It's interesting that you're like brought up the different styles like immediately, because I was reading Seth Rudetsky used to write for Playbill every so often, and he did an article on how Lynn Aaronson and Stephen Flaherty became an acclaimed songwriting team. And I'm assuming that he interviewed them, but it's not just like an interview. It's just like a summary of, I guess, their conversation. And he says that Stephen used to use different colored pens to differentiate the styles, his different writing styles. So every style was like, here's red, this style, blue, this style, green. And then I think the question was like, do you think Sondheim ever used different colored pens? And I think the answer is no.
Well, I think he was a pencil kind of guy. He was a pencil guy.
And he would sometimes like underline things maybe with like a red pen, but he definitely wasn't writing like, so
This is giving like 12-year-old girl buying school supplies, you know? Like,
no, it
is. My pink pen, gotta use my purple pen.
Or those pens that like you can flip it down and then flip it back up.
Wow,
you
know, like four-color pens or like 10-color pens.
Maybe we should get Stephen Flaherty a different four-color pen.
Merry Christmas. Maybe we should get one of those. Let's get one of those. Branded. After Broadway.
Yes. Okay. Let's put it in. But to go back in time, they first met in 1983. At a BMI musical theater workshop. Lynn typically writes the lyrics and the books for their shows, and Stephen does the composing. And I was listening to them do a couple of interviews, and they say that they're kind of style when they get into writing or their like routine is that they try to look for three songs: an opening, a ballad, and then a comedy slash action number, and then everything else gets filled up from there. I always think it's so interesting when people start with the opening number, because to me I would feel like that's so hard, but I also understand that it sets the tone for your entire show. So mm-hmm. I don't know, like, it's always interesting to me when we dive into these different composers or for doing this series, and it's like, where do you start, where do you end? And I wouldn't even know how to like pick up my four color pencils and begin.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely not. No, I don't know how anyone writes anything.
No, it's so true.
It's crazy. As you know, we're gonna sit here and we're gonna criticize, and we criticize here all the time. Yeah. But at the end of the day, like, I could never do any of this.
We have zero talent to do any of this stuff. Yeah, it's actually crazy. So as Steph said, we are talking about five shows. They have a catalog. We will just say their first show that went to Broadway was called Lucky Stiff. We did listen to it on my balcony, but we were not paying any attention to it. So I don't even know if I could name you a song from that musical.
No, it was not standing out to us. It was not standing out.
But we are going to go in order, so that means that the first one that we are going to talk about is Once on This Island, which we've talked about in the past, but we are bringing it back up.
We talked about it very early in our podcast journey, if I know,
it's like
recall.
Episode 3 or 4, I think.
Yes, because it had just kind of closed on Broadway, and we both got to see that production. This is actually the only show that we're going to talk about today that I have seen a production of, because
I have seen another one, but yes, we'll get to it way later.
We'll get to it right at the end. It is the only one that I have seen because it was revived in 2017? No, 2018?
Mm-hmm.
2019.
2018.
Sorry, it opened in the fall of 2018. It was the 2018-2019 Tony season. Yes. I saw it in November 2019, and then it closed,
I
believe.
In December 2019.
No, you saw it before. You saw it before me.
Did I? Oh, yeah, yes, I did. And then I tried to see it again. It was closing weekend when Shar and I were in New York, and there was no chance. But yes, I saw it with my family in the summer of 2018. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very Tiki ATS-able, so it was quite easy to
get at that time, yes.
Yes. Yeah. Earlier in the run, not right at the end. Once on This Island, I'm going to be upfront here. It is my favorite of all of the shows that we're going to talk about today.
Wait, tell us when the original was on Broadway.
So the original Once on This Island production was on Broadway in 1990, starring LaShawns, who is still, you know, a Broadway staple. And it tells the story of a young girl who mm-hmm. is like, feels she is chosen for a special life,
mm-hmm.
and she kind of fulfills that destiny by meeting a man or a boy from the other side of the island, and kind of the complicated relationship when they intermingle and what that means for them. Is that a good summary?
That was
summary?
Great. That was great. Yeah, that was pretty good.
A little teaser.
Yeah, I watched a video of Lynn and Steven talking about Once on This Island at, I think it was like a 54 below something, and Steven said that he composed this on the subway, which is where he writes a lot of his stuff. I'm wondering if he has like a piano app on his phone that he just like, dun, 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 you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm so interested where that comes
probably
to
not
be.
In 1989 or whatever when they were writing
this. No, that's true, but that's even more confusing.
He's probably like, just humming and writing notes.
Yeah. And you know? she was saying that what first came to be was that like dun 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 dun, or like the mm-hmm. you know when they introduce the gods, I think it's in the yeah. opening number, the like Asaka grow me sure. a garden. Please, Agwe, don't flood my garden. So it's all the mm-hmm. same all the way through. And she said because it's so, I'm going to say like staccato, I think is the correct word for that, like punchy, yeah. that she was saying that like for, to write the lyrics, the words were like on the tips of each of those notes. I'm like, oh, that's an interesting way to put that. So that's my only fun tidbit about Once on This Island, but I do agree. I think it is my favorite of their work as well. It's also so different. I mean, we could talk about the fact that maybe two white people shouldn't write this score.
Yeah.
But, I do think that there was a lot of like thought, conversations, care put into it, but it's not for you or I to say.
You know, my opinion of it is very much colored by the recent revival that was on Broadway, where I felt a lot of respect was paid to the culture that the show is displaying and portraying.
This, like, Once on This Island is based on a book, which You said it's like a loose retelling of like The Little Mermaid, right?
Yes, it is based on a book. It is a book called My Love, My Love, or The Peasant Girl by Rosa Guy. And Lynn Ahrens found it in the used book section at a Barnes & Noble. And she opened the book and read the first lines. And she said, that sounds so musical. Mm-hmm. And she read the entire book and went to Stephen Flaherty and said, I found our next musical. And so they found it for themselves and said, this is a story that they feel needs to be told. And I kind of agree, like, it does need to be told, but I do think it's interesting, like, this is just, like, a general statement, you know, before, or we used to think, I'm always the right person to tell this story, and now I think right. I'm much more critical, like, am I the voice that needs to be heard, or am I the voice that needs to amplify this, am I the one who needs to tell the story, and I think maybe we would think about it differently now. Even the most recent revival, directed by Michael Arden, also...
I was about to say, yeah.
Also a white man, like... And there were black people on the creative team. The entire cast, for the most part, were people of color. But yeah, I do think it's interesting when we're thinking about like who is telling these stories. Yeah,
it's interesting because, again, in the same interview that I watched, she said that when she read the book that it, in their minds, they created like a Caribbean, like mystical, almost like island, whereas this right. new revival... was Michael Arden saying, like, no, I want it to be more, like, almost present-day Haiti. So that's why the new revival looks... I mean, we watched that very old Tony performance that was giving budget. And the new production was giving, like, budget in the best way. So to see, like, the difference in almost location is kind of interesting. But I do remember there also being issues casting-wise because remember when, like, Isaac was cast, they were like, well, he's, like, light-skinned. And
but that's... That is the
I know
point,
it's part
right.
of the show, but if you see the, like, original cast, it's not, like, as explicit. No.
I remember... This is a true tangent, but do you remember that, like, Brandon Victor Dixon, like, Instagram post or whatever
yes.
he saw once on this island?
Yes.
And he was like, this girl, this is a horrible message that we're sending to young girls. This girl giving everything up for a white man. And then people had to be like, he's actually biracial.
Yes.
That's the point
yes.
of the story. It's about colorism.
Yeah.
You
but
know,
I remember
these...
vividly Isaac, like, having to basically answer in interviews that, like, which is still a problem, like, today mm-hmm. with, like, mixed...
Being like,
race, that it's just yeah. like you're not like black enough to tell the story and you're not white enough to be a character in other stories. Like, it's still mm-hmm. I think this show is probably more relevant today than it's
no,
ever
it's
been.
No, it's extremely relevant. The color, I was listening to it the other day, and you know, every time you hear something or you see something, like, different lines stick out to you. And what song was it? It was
How Horrible of a Man Daniel Is, because every song in this show
I don't remember what song it was, but they sang like, they hate us for our blackness, like what they recognize in themselves, because, you know, the Bosomes, they are the French kind of colonized the island, and so the Bosomes, the more well-off side, are mixed race, they're mixed with the
it's
French
the
who come to colonize
the
island.
It's the sad tale of the
Bosomes. Yes, yeah, exactly. And then the other side of the island are people who are not mixed, who the island is still colonized, but they're come fully black, and so they, you know, the more well-off side of the island, like, shuns mm-hmm. them because they want to, I don't know, like, be more white or more French or more, you know, they think they're above them for this, but also at the same time they are the same as them.
Yeah.
And so that was a line that, like, stuck out to me in this listening that I don't know if I'd ever, like, heard before. Like, I'd heard it before, but I hadn't heard it before.
But also at the same time, you're like, wow, this, like, white woman wrote that. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes. Who wrote this? And yeah, I'm wondering, like, what is in the original book? Is that
yeah,
a line
yeah,
directly from there?
Yeah,
are these things that were, like, explicit in that book, or were these, like, stories or messages that they, like, read into from it? Is it just mm-hmm. implied? I'm very mm-hmm. curious. Yeah, I'm very curious what story they decided to tell, whose story they decided to tell.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so interesting. But I, at the same time, we're going to talk about some other shows. This is my favorite of their shows. I think it has so much life in it. It has so much spirit, so much energy. From that recent production, the choreography brought it to life, the costume
yeah.
design.
Mm-hmm.
Brought it to life. The orchestrations brought it to
yeah,
life.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's talk about some of those orchestrations, because this is obviously, I would say, like, it's the most different from the rest of their score. Mm-hmm. I actually think, as we said at
probably
the beginning
of
this episode,
because of the orchestrations.
Yes, every show sounds different, but like here we're getting like steel drums. Yes. We're getting like
the instruments that they chose.
Caribbean like music. I wish there was a little more, but I think it's just like in the realm of what you can do in budget on bands and stuff on stage. I wonder if they, in the new production, I will be honest, I've really only listened to the newer production. I've listened to the original Broadway cast like twice, but this is the one that I always go to because I do think it sounds like grander and bigger and better. With like however many years in between, obviously you can do a lot more and budgets are higher. But I would hope that they like spoke to people that actually like play these instruments and like to get that sort of... like have that, have those conversations as well. So it's not just like Stephen playing at a piano. Like I hope that they brought in influences.
So the orchestrations were done by Anne-Marie Milazzo and Michael Starobin. So Michael Starobin is, he's done orchestrations for many a Broadway show, including like he won Tony Awards for orchestrations of Assassins, Next to Normal. So huge, huge career. And Anne-Marie Milazzo, she does not have a clickable Wikipedia page.
I see that.
So, so we're just we're riding blind here. She they call her a vocalizer on here. So I wonder, because there's a lot of sounds created for the ambiance with their mouths and stuff. I'm wondering if a lot of that was what she did.
Let's actually talk about some of those vocalizations, because I think one of my favorite things about this cast recording and when I saw it on stage is like the but like the soundscape that we get, whether it's like rain or people making all of those different like animal noises like with their mouths. The grass, the trees. But the most memorable to me is they're like, it's just like, it's really good stuff. Like it's really good stuff. And then we get into like the less happy stuff. And one of my favorite songs in the entire show is Forever Yours. Like
I thought we were going to say Rain. I thought you were going to say Rain.
I do love Rain. Rain is amazing.
That has good sounds. Good
but like Forever Yours gets this like dark undertone. You get these like big drum moments, almost like thunder. I feel like everything in this entire musical is like pathetic fallacy.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, the gods, the god of water, the god of...
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. When it rains. When it rains. Yes. Forever Yours is beautiful.
It's so stunning. Good. It's so good.
It is such a beautiful love ballad. Surely the gods meant this to be a sign that my life is forever yours, and you are mine. Mine. Arrogant fool, think you can hold back death. Stay away. This boy is mine. I am his dying. I mean, if that's what you're saying, if they do their opening number, their ballad, their comedy song, I see, you know, the opening number is We Dance, their ballad is Forever Yours, and their comedy song is Mama Will Provide. Yeah. And you kind of have these, like, three beautiful songs,
well,
and then you
I
just
would
kind
also,
of piece in other things in there.
I would also argue that, like, Human Heart is their ballad.
Sure, Human Heart. You are
part. Lea Salonga, sing it to me every day. That was also when she went back into the show to close it is when the ticket sales skyrocketed.
Yeah. Yeah. Because was it Michelle Williams?
It was Michelle
remember
Williams.
This?
But she
remember
never
this
like
incident?
Finished her contract.
She did three total performances.
I remember it well because at my job, I was producing her interview where she wrote a autobiography where she talked about Once on This Island and how she was only in it for like 2.5 weeks.
2.5, 3 performances. Swear.
No, no, from like rehearsal to end was like two and a half weeks.
Two and a half
like
weeks.
That's what she was contracted for.
I remember because it was like very soon after I had been. So I was like, oh, Michelle Williams. And I also feel like around a similar time, there was that Toronto production of Grease and she came in to be Teen Angel for a week.
Yes.
We had like rotating Teen Angels.
I remember this. I never saw it, but I remember this.
No, I saw it twice, but only with like the original Teen Angel. I would also say it was bad, but that's that's another story.
And then another song that you and I both love, "Waiting for Life." What a great
Waiting
Want
for
song!
Life. Yes, "Waiting for Life." it is, we've talked about it as an I Want song. I really think it is like the blueprint for I Want songs. I think maybe, you know, we've talked about The Little Mermaid, A Part of Your World, and then we've talked about this. It's such a beautiful story about this young girl, like, waiting for life. And for both of those, they're kind of based on each other, or this is based on Little Mermaid. Both versions have, like, recognized that moment and written a wonderful song out of it.
Even to think of what I was just saying about how this, like, show and storyline is probably more relevant than ever. Like, look at the live-action Little Mermaid that's coming out, starring a black Ariel. Like, it is very, like, one and the same.
It fits because someone from a different world, not worried about being accepted or entering, feeling like other from the world she is entering. It absolutely works. It absolutely fits so well.
Maybe Isaac should have auditioned for Prince Harry.
Maybe he did.
We did hear recently that Harry Styles was
That was the rumor at the time.
It came out. That he turned it down because he wanted to do more serious roles.
He wanted to be in, like, Dunkirk.
Don't Worry, Darling.
Don't Worry, Darling. Yes, he wanted to be a more serious actor, and that's fine, I guess, Harry, but this would have been fun, too. I would have loved for Isaac to be in this as well. I want to see him on my screen at all times.
I know.
For me, we've talked about, obviously, Forever Yours, mentioned Rain, Waiting for Life. For me, I mean, I cry through this whole cast recording, but Why We Tell the Story.
This is why we tell the story.
It just makes me so emotional. It makes me so emotional to hear that song. They performed it on, like, Good Morning America or the Today Show. And I swear, I've watched the performance, like, so many times. Like, but not even outside, like, in the dressing room. It was the most random performance. And then they all introduced themselves by name. I don't know.
I know what you're talking about. Yes. Yes.
Is it, like, amazing. Robin Roberts?
Maybe.
Who is it? Is it Gail? Is it Gail?
Maybe. Whatever it is, we need to move on to our next show.
Okay, sorry. So actually, Love, Once in the Silence.
Yeah, we love Once in the Silent. Now in the timeline, the next show is actually my favorite year, but we are skipping that and we are going straight to, which is maybe their most successful show, and that's Ragtime. I've never seen it.
No, I've never seen it either.
And I've only really recently listened to the cast recording in full.
Yes. Sam, I've listened to it, like, sporadically over the years. It's not what I, like, go to, but I do know it is beautiful. Ragtime has a Toronto connection. It was produced by acclaimed theater producing company Livent.
Where is Garth these days?
I don't know.
He is running away.
The musical had its world premiere here in Toronto, where it was called the Ford Center for the Performing Arts, is now Meridian Arts Center. It opened here in 1996. It ran for 9 months, and it had the majority of the original Broadway cast, as we said, produced by Canadian impresario. This is a direct quote from Wikipedia, Garth Drabinsky and Livent. So we obviously know what happened there, so we don't need to get into that.
Yeah.
One thing I want to get into. I feel like Garth has always been trying to recapture the magic of Ragtime.
100%.
I did see Suzatska, and I was like, this is giving Ragtime, like, not in a good way. But, and I was like, Paradise Square, when I saw...
I swear everyone I was like, this said is giving Paradise Ragtime. Square was, this, like, trying to be Ragtime. Yeah.
And it just never was going to be Ragtime. No. It was just, Suzatska was just not going to be Ragtime.
No.
It's just, there's just no way.
But maybe that's because they didn't have Aaron Flaherty on that score.
Maybe. I don't even know who wrote Suzatska. Wow, that's a tangent for another day. We don't need to know. But yeah. Found obviously wonderful success with with Ragtime in Toronto, and then on Broadway, where it opened on Broadway in 1998 at the, again, it was called the then Ford Center for the Performing Arts. It is now the Lyric Theater, which, interesting news, the first ever show to recoup at the Lyric Theater is Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. So,
well, they sorry have had some to tragic every, productions there.
Sorry
Spider-Man.
To every tenant ever at the Lyric.
Well, sorry they to used to be everyone. Foxwoods, too. They've also the Foxwoods. Had many changes, yeah.
Yes. Let's see. What are their names? What are their names?
Wasn't that like random Cirque du Soleil show there?
Paramore. They yes, it was. Recoup. But then I think Spider-Man paid them to... No, Harry Potter paid them to leave.
Yeah.
Harry Potter paid them like and a you know large what? Sum of money to leave.
They just got that money back.
That's probably part of their capitalization.
I'm
that,
sure it
like,
is.
Huge sum of money they paid for Paramore to leave. So they made a lot of money. It's interesting. This is an absolute tangent, but Harry Potter just announced its closing here in Toronto in July. And so we're wondering if they recouped. And
they absolutely no. did not. They absolutely no did that. Not. But as we say on this tangent, and then we will go back to Ragtime in one second, very interesting because they would have known this information as they were getting ready to announce the season preview for Mirvish. And there's still nothing playing in the Ed Mirvish Theater for the entire year. So maybe something will switch. We don't know.
Yeah, they'll probably move stuff around then.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we thought they were going to have two long-running shows next year, but turns out no.
I could see like Aladdin going there because it's a big set.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I can definitely see that.
We'll see what happens.
Just pack in the kids.
They got to take out all of the Harry Potter house, like all of the house branding needs
the
to
the decor.
Leave.
Do you think they'll open up? Because they made the balcony smaller. Do you think they'll open it back up again?
I don't know. I don't know where they put all those seats because they also changed the aisles, right?
I think they're just behind a wall. At the top.
No, but like yeah, the orchestra
oh,
aisle.
Down, they did change yeah. the aisle so they could have a center aisle for Voldemort to walk down instead
Spoiler.
Of two side aisles. guys, keep the secrets, but it's been years.
I know, very interesting.
Yeah, I am curious about their
I'm sure they'll keep the blue velvet because it looks pretty. But
the seats are nice. I mean, they paid a lot for that renovation. They're not going to put the old seats back in.
I would love to know. I would love to know about the money that went in because I had heard a rumor that it would take 4 years to recoup and they didn't
four
even get it.
4 years?
I'd heard they had two? It's 13 months. It's 13 months that it would have been running.
Yeah.
So get your tickets while you still can. They're always on discount and you can get rush tickets daily. So
I asked my mom, I'm like, Mom, would you want to go one more time? She's like, No, that's the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
You've also already seen it twice, and she's also seen it twice.
Yes, that's true. But yeah. part yeah. of me was just like, try this go one last time.
Maybe for free, but not
paying. Can I pay the $19? Should I be entering the lottery again?
Honestly, no.
$19 is actually too much. Okay, sorry, let's go. Ragtime.
To Ragtime.
People call it Ragtime.
Another video that I watched as I'm talking about Ragtime was Steven was talking about how this is a piano-based score, which you can definitely hear
you
on this
hear.
Cast recording for
sure.
They
really love a theme, don't they? We
okay,
say they don't have
this,
anything distinct.
This is distinct for this, but that... Yeah. It doesn't end. The theme is suspended, and then it kind of like loops before it finishes. So it's like the way that it's done is very interesting. Also, this is really where we get his colored pens because he is writing for three different musical styles, which I think is really interesting.
I mean, maybe this is the show that shows their strengths. We say they're kind of chameleons. They can do anything, any musical style. They're not stuck in one. So when
yeah,
we
like
have a show that
class.
Intermingles... Three yeah. different families, three different cultures, and they're able to write to each one, you know, that does play to their specific set of skills.
Another show that, like, interesting that these two people wrote, because there's a lot of, like, race and diversity issues within the storyline, so...
Right.
I think they... I don't know what the reason is, but they obviously found success with this. And as I said at the beginning of this episode, like 25 years later, Ragtime has had its reunion, which that reunion was supposed to happen in 2020. It was a...
I think it was supposed to happen even earlier, if I recall.
Was,
but I was watching...
It was
Thoroughly watching
Modern Millie that moved it, right?
I was watching Audra McDonald and Brian Stokes Mitchell. They were on one of the morning shows to promote the reunion concert
oh, yeah,
in
yeah.
Wheels of a Dream. And they said they were supposed to do it even before the pandemic, but then Marin Maisie passed, and so they waited. They didn't want
to
do it right
then. Well,
no,
it was supposed to be before the pandemic. It was supposed to
yes,
be like...
Yes, and then they had a pandemic date, and then the pandemic happened, and it kept getting delayed and delayed because of that, and then finally
right.
they were able to do it now. I think they did
yeah.
like a kind of virtual one, but this was the one.
And it was all for charity, like all of that.
Yeah.
It was for the... I can't remember what the new Actors Fund is called, because it's not called the Actors Fund anymore, but it was for that.
I do think that this is a show that could be revived at any time, though, because, again, another storyline that's very relevant to today. Like, it's still as topical as ever.
There was a revival in 2009. Yeah. And it ran for not very long. It ran for 28 previews and 65 performances.
I mean, I'm sorry, but you're really not going to get Stokes and Audra caliber.
It was Stephanie Umo, Quentin Earl Darrington,
love
Christian
him.
Knoll. I know, we do. Christian Knoll, Robert Petkoff. It was Bobby Stigert. Yeah. No one standing out to me here. Mm-hmm. Like, I know I love Christian Knoll's beautiful. Like, yes, but obviously it's not Audra and Stokes, but...
No. They did win a Tony for this, though, so that is their... I mean, do they count as Tony for Best Revival on Once on This Island, too? I guess not.
I don't know. I don't think so. I think the producers win those.
Yeah, so this is their sole Tony win, so clearly their most, like, critically acclaimed
for the score here?
Show.
For the score? Mm-hmm. Yes. I think this score is really beautiful. The high point of it is the opening number,
Ragtime. It's so good.
It just establishes the story so well. I think we did an opening numbers episode, and I don't think we talked about this because I don't think we were, like, as familiar, but this is one of those wonderful opening numbers that just establishes everything about the show and about the story and about, like, it plops you into a moment in time, and by the end you're just, like, ready to go into the story. We were watching the Tony performance before we hopped on here, and even just the way it's choreographed with the three groups of people walking around each other,
so
looking at each other, singing, it establishes everything so well. Mm-hmm. One of the best opening numbers of a musical.
By Terrence McNally, and they said that they spent a lot of time working with him to make sure that, like, his book matched with their lyrics and music, which I think is important for, like, a story like this where there is so many different sounds that you're looking for here. Steven said that Terrence described it as, like, bouquets. So every class, every family was, like, a bouquet of music, which I think is really cool to talk about it that way. It's just, like... Although we will say, there are many songs that are geo-gated in Canada.
I was just about to bring this up. I have a bone to pick.
So,
with Canada. No, it's actually a very, very big problem because these songs that seem to be blocked for me on Spotify and you on Apple Music, because we are obviously a mixed podcast. Yeah. We do not use the same
streaming service. I thought you were going to say household, but we don't live together.
I was going to say marriage, but then I was like, let's just... We are a mixed podcast in that I use Spotify and Terry uses Apple Music. For research. Yeah, no, it's good because we also had a hard time finding Rocky, but that's a whole other thing. So the three songs that are missing on Spotify, they're grayed out. I see them there, but they're grayed out, are Your Daddy's Son, New Music, and Wheels of a Dream. And I'm like...
Horrible. Wheels of a Dream is actually tragic.
I was like, this is why we're here. I'm not listening to this cast recording if I'm not getting Audra McDonald's, okay? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Why specifically these three songs? Mm-hmm. And if you listen to this version without, like, Audra McDonald's not in the show.
Well, on mine, yeah, I know, that's what I was gonna say.
Because she doesn't sing until Your Daddy's Son.
Yeah, and then you
keep
just
her,
like,
silent.
I mean, if you know Audra's voice, you can hear her, like, when she does come in, but you're also like, I've missed a very big plot point here that I can't figure out.
You're like, it's not like that for me. And then you looked at it, you're like, oh, wait, it was.
Yeah, because it goes from 11, track 11 to 13, then we skip 14 and 15 and go straight to 16. But I will say, when I listened to it not hearing those songs, one of the songs that stood out to me was the duet of Audra and Stokes of Sarah Brown Eyes. What
an amazing, beautiful song. Like, first of all, their voice is ridiculous. But there are some like gems on this cast recording. Like, they did a really good job. There's also a lot of music. These songs are long. They're not like...
It's 2 hours long, this cast recording. Yeah,
it's really long. So
38 songs.
I would like to say that it's maybe almost sung through. That's why it's this long. But I actually could be completely wrong.
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know.
We've never seen it, so...
I know. Yeah, Shaw Festival here did it in Canada in 2012.
They'll never do it again.
Probably not, but yeah, I think it's because this has a huge cast. It's quite expensive, probably, to put on.
And didn't Marcus Nance sing "Wheels of a Dream" at that Stratford?
Yes, concert. Yes, they did. They did sing "Wheels of a Dream" at.
Oh, we got a lot of Aaronson Flaherty at that concert.
We did because we got. It was called "Why We Tell the Story," so we got a lot of "Once on This Island," and we got "Wheels of a Dream" as well at that concert. So yes,
but I agree with you. The best number in this entire cast recording is the opening number, and then like adjacent, probably the finale is really good too.
I just want to. I mean, there's many things. I was gonna say "Make Them Hear." I was gonna say "Back to Before." Great. Mary Maisie, just her voice.
Yeah,
miss her.
Yeah, no, it's true.
You know, her voice so beautiful. Yeah, the first song that ever like really stood out to me was. Talking about Audra, was "Your Daddy's Son." I think it was an obsession maybe like 2 years ago. I spoke about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember hearing stories about them. I think when we had Tim on, I think Tim told us the story, but Tim told us the story of when she was just kind of in the workshops and they were like, we have Audra McDonald here and she's not singing. And we need her to sing a song. And so they wrote this song for her. And it is absolutely stunning. It is beautiful. So yes, the beautiful, like the women getting to sing in the show, gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And baby Leah Michelle.
I know. What year was this on Broadway?
1998. And it ran for, I believe, 2 years, maybe longer. Which I think is a very respectable amount of time.
Yes, probably their longest running
musical. It ran for about 2 years after 834 performances and 27 previews.
And so then on
probably
the
their longest, well, we'll see, but maybe their longest first run. But yeah, even that's longer than the revival of Once on This Island.
And then on the flip side, let's move to the year 2000, where we only got 198 performances of their next musical, Seussical. Steph, tell me how you really feel.
I hate this. Sorry, this was actually painful for me.
Let's talk about the fact, though, that Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Flaherty at one point said that this was the longest, like, not longest running show as in that it was on Broadway for a long time, but like longest running show in the fact that you could go every single state in the United States and someone was performing Seussical.
I understand this because it's great for children.
Yeah.
A lot of characters, very licensable.
It's one of the most performed shows like of them. It's their most performed show ever.
And that makes sense to me. And that makes sense. You know, also like, well, this is going to sound like a criticism, and it's not meant as a criticism. You can have some non-singers in this show. You know what I mean? You can have some talk singers.
Like, every character doesn't need a song, is what you're saying.
Yeah. No, but I mean, like, they can just kind of, like, talk through some of the songs. They don't need to be belting. They're not necessarily, like, that's how I feel about this show. You know what I mean? You can cast an 8-year-old, and they can just kind of, like,
sure.
Charm their way through
regionally,
a song.
Regionally.
Yeah. Yes. Not on Broadway, but, you know, they're very flexible for the performers who are doing
We should have done
them.
This at camp. What were we thinking?
We should have done this at camp. I remember one of our counselors, I think, when they were at... Our camp was, like, a new camp, and the camp it replaced.
Yeah.
Summerstock. It's a normal name.
You can't go there now, so don't even
You can't go there now. It doesn't exist. Also, it's, like, a very, like, normal name for, like, a summer theater program, Summerstock. Yeah. Basically, she said that they did Seussical, and she said at that point that her dad was like, I think you're a little old for this camp. I think you've aged out.
Oh, like was a camper.
Yeah, oh, it was a camper when they did Seussical, and she's like, her dad knows
that like grown adults did this on Broadway.
Grown adults did do this on Broadway. Okay, let me pick a song that I liked.
I think it would be fun. I do want to say, Seussical was in 2000. They did also stunt cast Cat in the Hat with Rosie O'Donnell at one point, which...
Right? I swear Whoopi did it. I swear Whoopi did it.
I know when you said this though, but I looked it up and she never did. She did the Forum.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking. Maybe I'm thinking of Forum.
Yeah, I think you might be thinking of that. Yeah.
It just seems like something she would do.
I know. I don't hate Suzuko. I think that there, I think as a whole, it's a little weak, but there are moments that are great. I think Kevin Chamberlain sounds the best on this cast recording. This is also like, I did hear a little bit of Once on This Island in this score, which I can't say that for other songs. To me, Kevin Chamberlain, is that what I just said?
Yeah.
Yeah. He played Horton, and his song Sala Salu, which I think is actually stunning, has a lot of like Once on This Island tones. That was very beautiful. To it.
If we can find it, then all will be well. Troubles there are few. Someday we'll go to Sala Salu. Sala Salu, Sala Salu.
Maybe because there's so much about like nature in this show, which is similar to like Once on This Island. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's my like hypothesis.
I also feel like I'm not as hateful to this because I saw the worst Sue show ever, The Lorax, and this was like 10 times better than that.
Really? Really?
Yeah.
I really found the listening to this unpleasant.
What I will say Alone in the Universe?
This is what I was gonna say. My favorite song from the show was the Alone in the Universe reprise.
So pretty.
And now, little egg, you're alone in the universe too. Who would have thought you'd be left up to me? A fool of an elephant. In a tree. Well, this time I swear I'll do better than try. I'll protect you from harm. Yes, I'll do it or die. So rest now, young egg.
It was really pretty. I also thought Sala Salu was really nice. There was another song that I also noticed. Yeah, very that was cute. Nice. There was something early that was kind of like choral, if that makes sense, that I liked, but I can't remember what it was called. No, people sounded good, but I just did not enjoy myself listening to this. It felt quite juvenile, which I know it's based on children's books, so that makes sense.
Maybe they were like, but we just did a heavy show with Once on This Island. We just did a heavy show ragtime. Let's have fun.
Let's have some fun.
And let's add some feathers and some jewels and whatever else.
Alone in the Universe.
So pretty.
It was really pretty. No, that was my favorite song from the show, Alone in the Universe. The reprise specifically.
But I also would love to see children do this. I would love to go to like a young people's theater production of Suzuko.
It would be so cute to see this as kids.
It would be so good.
I do not think adults need to do it.
No. Not anymore. Not that it's like... I wonder if this is Suzuko Jr., if they actually just do the actual, like, Suzuko as is.
Oh, that's a good question. How long is the cast recording? It's like 1 hour and 15 minutes, which is actually a long time.
Also crazy, because it's like almost 25 years old, that show. Like, we are in the year 2023. It came out in 2000. Like, wild. So but
23 years old. Wow.
Okay, let's move on. Their next show was A Man of No Importance. We are not speaking about this, but we will acknowledge The Streets of Devlin.
Yes, we will acknowledge On the Streets of Dublin, and we will acknowledge that Jim Parsons was supposed to come in this season.
I remember reading the boards. We were sending it back and forth to each other, but even got as far as the telecharge like test page for tickets.
Yes, it was happening, and
dates
then,
were there, and then money got involved.
And then Jim Parsons, they weren't offering enough money. That's the rumor, basically.
They weren't offering enough money.
He sent a group message to the cast or whatever, because it was off Broadway and they were going to transfer.
It's supposed to be at Circle, right?
That makes sense.
I think that's where it was supposed to be, because Circle's open right now, and I think it will be till next season. Yeah, because K-pop was there, right?
Right. I think you're right. Yeah, it's funny, like once Circle in the Square was such a in-demand theater, and now there's just empty. It's just sitting empty.
Yeah.
Crazy.
But we're skipping that and we're going straight to Rocky. Not a greatest hit, in my opinion. This is the worst score I've ever listened to in my entire life. I'm so sorry to Lynn Aaron and Stephen Flaherty, but what were you thinking?
I think,
and also sorry, just one more thing: the fact that they like ran this by Sylvester Stallone, and he was like, "Yes, I am." Floored.
We were just watching.
Horrified.
Okay, because this show went on an interesting journey in that it was like workshopped in the US, like, and then and then to get it more funding, the only place they could get it funding was in Germany. So we were just watching a clip of this show in German before we came on. And so some of the songs are in English, some of them are in German. It's like back and forth. But this clip was funny because he was singing in German and they would just cut to like Sylvester Stallone in like a headset, just be like nodding. Be like, yes, looking approving. It was silly. And then it made its way back to Broadway. I believe Mamma Mia left the Winter Garden for this.
So they opened on Broadway in 2014 at the Winter Garden.
2012. I mean, 2012?
2014, it says. Oh, it says on April 2013, it was announced that the show would transfer to Broadway in February 2014.
You're right, sorry.
And it
2012 played... was in Germany. Sorry, I was paying respect to the original German.
And it played at the Winter Garden for 188 performances, which is actually too many.
It doesn't fit our flops criteria, which was 150 performances.
You're right. Would you like to talk about the set? Because this has nothing to do with Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Flaherty. No. But let's talk about the set.
This was a musical directed on Broadway by Alex Timbers. Mm-hmm. And he knows how to create a vision. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, Michael Arden, we talked about creating a vision. But Alex Timbers knows how to create a vision. And his vision was... in my opinion, iconic. Basically, for anyone who's not familiar, the ending of the show, I've never seen it, but I've seen many a bootleg because I'm obsessed with this. Basically, the end of the show, like the first eight rows of the orchestra would have to get up out of their seats mm-hmm. and move because they would kind of pull out a giant boxing ring into the audience. And then these people from the first eight rows would go kind of to like bleachers behind the boxing ring. And they would have like screens, like set up like a real boxing ring. And they would basically stage exactly like a real boxing match. Mm-hmm. They had cameras on in the ring. They had the girls. They had the announcers. And then they would even, as the fight was going on, crew or cast members would be on putting makeup on Rocky and Apollo Creed to make them look more bloodied. And like the fight was going on over and over. And I think this is a feat of direction. One, that you have like 50... 60, 70 people get up out of their seats in the middle of the show and move to different seats, and it is not a distraction from the show. You have this huge set piece moving. You have this extremely technical piece of choreography happening.
Yeah.
It's crazy. However, the show is garbage. And
it's so bad. It's the worst thing I've ever listened to. And it's funny because, like, the Rocky theme is in there, and so is, like, yeah. Eye of the Tiger. And it's the worst version of Eye of the Tiger. It's not even, like, the singing is one thing, but the orchestrations are actually bad. Like, I'm sorry, Stephen, but they're bad.
It's really generic. This show, I think that's the real problem with it. It feels really, really generic. And it feels so, like, dour. I don't know. I've seen the original Rocky movie.
Just, like, the poster for Rocky, it's, like, from the Tony Award-winning team that gave you Ragtime, gives you... Rocky.
This is what we're saying. They don't have a specific identity in writing. So maybe that's how they kind of end up with this like bland, kind of nothing score that has no memorable tunes in it.
I couldn't even hum you a song that wasn't the Rocky theme song.
Keep on standing.
We
do love Andy Carl. I do kind of think... anytime I've seen a bootleg or a clip, I cringe at the Italian accent.
Another, like, cultural appropriation from Aaron's and Flaherty. What?
You know, this appropriation of Italian culture. And as an Italian, I am here to speak up about this. I am here to defend my people.
There's a song when they're singing about, like, I don't even know, another Rocky? Is there another Rocky? There's like a literal song when they're like asking him to speak to someone, and I am just so confused. Here's the thing that I did notice about them though. They seem to tell or try to, I don't know that it's always successful, they seem mm-hmm. to put a lot of like story into songs. And I think sometimes it works, and I think in cases of Rocky, it absolutely does not, because I cannot follow. I just want to hear a song. I don't want to try and follow along an entire storyline. Do you know what I mean?
So yes, so I do think a good musical does have the narrative pushed forward by the songs and does not rely on the scenes. And I do think sometimes it's a delicate balance. You want your audience to be able to follow along. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, but yeah, I don't know. I really think the issue with this is the absolute blandness that is being given in this show. And I just, some of the song titles, let's talk about this. My Nose Ain't Broken. What is this? And there's a reprise of that.
I bet you they loved it in Germany, though.
They probably did love it in Germany. Fight from the Heart. Okay, I guess. I'm done. Whenever he says, like, Adrian, I find that so embarrassing. I really do. I find it embarrassing when Sylvester Stallone does it, too. So that's, my issue. But
Sylvester Stallone, like...
His voice is like that.
Voice. Not even that. But did he write Rocky?
He did. He wrote the screenplay for Rocky.
I just want to know. I just picture, like, Lynn Ahrens, Stephen Flaherty, and Sylvester Stallone in a room together. And they're like, so, we have this idea. And he's like, I love it. Because that's what this sounds like. It's so it's so confused to me. And again, like, so, so heavy on the storytelling that I just hate it. Sorry.
The book of this musical was written by Thomas Meehan and Sylvester Stallone. So.
Wow.
Lynn Ahrens, you can't blame her for this.
There's a headline here that says Rocky fights on Broadway and sings lyrics by New Jersey native Lynn Ahrens. Did we need that?
Well, I think... Oh, he's from Philadelphia, right? I thought he was from New Jersey for some reason.
Okay,
New
here's Jersey a quote.
A lot of Italians in New Jersey.
It says, Lynn Ahrens said, we couldn't quite wrap our minds around it until we were cajoled? I don't know that word. Yes. To look at the movie again and read the screenplay. Once I did that, it became very clear it was almost the best idea I've seen.
Oh.
Sorry.
What was it?
Lynn. Come on.
Look.
And then, yeah. It says, like, collaborated for 30 years. Stephen Flaherty wrote the iconic score to this iconic film. I'm like, I'm not sure it's an iconic score. Then they reference Alex Timbers because he had just done Peter and the Starcatcher, which I know you love.
I do.
By Buddy Andrew Jackson. And then Andy Carl of The Mystery of Edwin Drood fame at the time. Wow.
Yes,
really? His time capsule.
Well, The Mystery of Edwin Drood, he was in Brownface in that show, if you recall.
Yes, he was.
Him and Jesse Mueller doing questionable accents. A questionable accent after a questionable accent. Andy Carl. Why couldn't they find an Italian to play this role? I'm kidding. I love Andy Carl. I think this is fine. I actually don't have a problem with it.
Like, this man in the best shape of his entire life doing this musical.
He looked amazing. He looked
so good. He was ripped. He was really ripped.
He looked so good. I also want to just shout out to Terrence Archie, who played Apollo Creed in Germany as well as in on Broadway. So he did it all in German. And
sorry, this article is like killing me. Lynn Ahrens goes on to say, it was the only movie I've ever been in where everybody spontaneously sprang to their feet and cheered. And then it's on returning to it, she realized it's emotional. It's exciting. It has these truly utterly tender characters who are so in the need of each other. Not to mention this spectacular boxing match. The only thing spectacular about this musical was the boxing match. And with that, I can't even pick a song from this. I think we should move on.
Keep on standing. That's the best song.
That's the one. Mind.
I know where I'm from. I know who I am. But something in me don't give a damn. See it through. Keep on standing. Keep on standing.
And then we got, which maybe is like, actually I'll get your ranking in a minute, but like high on the list of one of their best scores here, Anastasia. Now.
Yes, so sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I kind of have always been like hesitant with this musical. Like I've heard it before, but I had listened to it all the way through, but I was just kind of met on it. Then I listened to it earlier today and I was in it. I was feeling Anastasia today.
It was gorgeous.
It was hitting.
Also, again, we're gonna correct ourselves here, but like, let's talk about a theme. We get that like Once Upon a December thematic, all the way to it's actually the music box is what the theme is, which I think works so well. But like, let's backtrack here, because they were obviously nominated for an Oscar and a Golden Globe for this song, Journey to the Past, from Anastasia. But what I thought was very interesting when listening to them speak on this is that they were saying that the reason they wanted to like musicalize Anastasia was because they thought that in the movie there were characters that like deserved songs but didn't get to sing as much as obviously like Anya. And one of those characters was Dimitri, which then they gave us one of the best songs in the show, which is My Petersburg. And it made me think of our episode, it will be two episodes ago now, of original songs for movie musicals, because we were talking about doing it the other way. And I think My Petersburg would be on a list of like best song written out of a movie musical.
Boils down to, there are some who have walls yet to climb. You and I on the fly just in time. But tonight there's a sky and quite a view. Welcome to My Petersburg.
Yes, I really, really love how they expanded those characters, and My Petersburg defines the character of Dimitri so, so well.
Also, not to mention, Derek Klena kills it on that song.
He sounds amazing. And you know who sounded amazing? Cody Simpson. Yes, this cast recording, I was listening to it, and it just propels forward so well.
It's really good.
It has such a great momentum. It has this really lyrical, magical fantasy quality to it, which is intentional. And, you know, it's not a Disney princess movie or story, but I feel like it fills a similar place in the market as a Disney princess musical does.
Yeah.
And it really captures that energy so well. Just the like twinkling. It is the music box, but the score feels like it twinkles. It shines.
Yeah.
One of my favorite songs, I listened to it multiple times when I was listening to this cast recording earlier. Stay, I Pray You. It's this like orchestral, like not orchestral, like these harmonies were so beautiful.
There's a lot of like choral vocals.
Yes, that's the word I'm looking for. Choral vocal. Yes,
like gorgeous. Some of these like it's a very well mastered cast recording. I'm sure they had like a lot of notes when they were recording. I want to point out that I was listening to another interview that they did, and they Lynn said that Stephen wrote three notes for Journey to the Past. And Lynn was like, I need four. Like, three doesn't work. And he was like, I only have three. I can only give you three. This is what, like, I feel. So then she turned that into, which is now the theme of the entire show, of, like, home, love, family. And that sort of, like, stuck all the way through. So, I don't know. I think when you have a chance to, again, this is very similar to what we were saying on that episode of Original Songs from Movie Musicals. Like, when you have the chance to revisit your work in the stage medium instead of the screen medium, like you really get to explore like that. The character that Ramin plays, I think his name is Gleb.
I do believe his name is Gleb. Our favorite Dancing with the Stars pro,
Gleb. But I don't think that character was anything really in the movie. And he is this like villain. And you can really hear like he has a different musical style than the rest of them on this cast recording. So it's very interesting to me that like they got to revisit and were so successful in this revisit.
Maybe that's what we've discovered through this, is that their strength, their signature is having these multiple musical styles interwoven within shows. Even going back all the way to Once on This Island, it's mostly one musical style. But when you talk about the Bozoms and Daniels family and his side, their music and when they're singing sounds different than what T-Moon's side of the island sounds. The Ragtime, you talk about these three separate families all sounding different, but it does still sound cohesive. When you talk about this, you know, you have Anastasia and Anya, but then who has this like princess sound, but then it's like true. Gleb is more of a villain, and they then, sound so different but cohesive.
And on the same side of that too, like Dimitri and I can't remember John Bolton character's name, but like they have this Vlad. Like Vlad.
We should have guessed that. We should have guessed.
You're right. It's Russian. They have this like poor sounding mm-hmm. side, and then her grandmother, played by Mary Beth Peel, she is yeah. like orchestral and beautiful. It's very like yeah, their strength is writing to characters, really, is what it mm-hmm. seems. They like choose, they have a vision of a character in their mind and they're able to write to it. My favorite song hands down is In a Crowd of Thousands. I think mm-hmm. Derek and Christy sound so beautiful. This was also they got to be in a show together again, like they did Carrie off
Broadway. They did Carrie first.
And then revisited and got to reunite for Anastasia, which was great.
I'm looking at the original reading in 2012, the cast right now.
Yeah.
So let me read this to you because it's pretty good. Let's start with the Dowager Empress, Maria Fyodorovna. Fyodorovna?
Oh.
In the original
yeah,
reading?
Something like it that, was yeah.
Angela Lansbury.
Okay. Why wasn't she on Broadway?
Okay, let's go on. Gleb, played by Aaron Lazar. Great. Vlad, played by Patrick Page.
Amazing. He's a little too evil for that character.
He's a little too evil. Swap him. Anya Anastasia, played by Kelly Barrett, who every day, we're like, when is Kelly Barrett going to get a Broadway
she's
vehicle?
She's in Parade.
I know she's in Parade, but that's not a vehicle for her.
No.
That's not a
but
vehicle
But this
for
would
her.
Have been.
And then... Do you think you can guess who did the 2012 reading, played Dimitri?
I need it a ended up, hint.
Okay, the hint is it ended up as Derek Klena.
Oh, Aaron Tveit?
Aaron Tveit did it.
They're always...
that reading. They're the always same. Doing the same thing.
You know what? Aaron is the Dimitri type, physically,
yes, but then when vocally. They did it like 4 or 5 years later, Aaron was busy, had aged out, whatever... And
they're always aging out of each other. Aaron, like Derek was too young to do Catch Me If You Can. Aaron too old to play Dimitri, and now they've crossed paths one more time on Moulin Rouge.
Exactly.
They are the same.
Finally the first time they're doing the same show.
They are the same.
Derek. I was gonna say I can't believe Derek never did Wicked, but he did do Wicked.
He did do Wicked.
So they did overlap there as well.
He did like Wicked with Lindsay Mendez. They're like
he did do Wicked. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Oh, I wonder what that's it. I don't know. Derek's never done Les Mis.
You're right. He hasn't done Les Mis. But Aaron never did it on stage, did he? He just did the movie.
That's true. Oh, I can't believe he never did it on stage. He definitely could have.
Well, because like...
Maybe when he's old enough to be a Valjean, he'll do that.
I don't know about that. He doesn't have the face. He's not rough enough for
this.
He's
too pretty.
He's too pretty, which is why he has to be like...
We're talking about him in my obsession of the week, but let's go on.
He has to be like a Marius or like even an Angela, which he has. He has to be one of the Barricade Boys. He's not... Do you think he could be like... What's the... Stars...
Javert.
Do you think he could be a Javert? I think he's more of a Javert than a Valjean, in my opinion.
I would love to see him as a villain. We always see him as like... not a villain. He's always like a heartthrob.
Except for on Gossip Girl, when he was
you're
a villain.
Right. And you know what? I love me some Trip Vanderbilt, so I would love to see him as Javert. But back to Anastasia.
Okay, let's...
just to wrap it up, obviously Journey to the Past is like their most iconic song from mm-hmm. this musical, from this movie. And it really is one of the... I mean, it's a fantastic song. Like, it is probably sung by so many people in audition rooms all the time. Like, you're always hearing Journey to the Past.
I was saying to you earlier, whenever I hear Liz Callaway sing Journey to the Past, like, I get emotional.
Yeah.
I don't know.
She performed it recently at their, like, 40th anniversary concert.
Probably. I was listening to, there's an album, I think it's a 54 Below concert.
Oh, with the comedy album cover?
Yeah. Yeah. They're, like, boxing on it.
I have it.
It's here. It's called Nice Fighting You 30th Anniversary Celebration Live at 54 Below in 2014 that they did this show, or it came out in 2014, the album. And the album cover is pretty funny. It's them boxing each other, but it start one of the first things that they sing is Liz Callaway singing Journey to the Past, and I don't know, just the way her voice sounds on it, especially like I feel like as she's aged, it's even more impactful to hear her sing it. So I love hearing her sing it. Let this be your sign, let this road be mine, let it lead me to my past.
the same as like Jody Benson, if you heard her sing like Part of Your World Today. You know what I mean? Also, I should say, as we were going through all of those shows, those were only ones that I picked out of Wikipedia. They have other shows. We just like thought that we were going to listen to all of those ones. And then we actually like greatest hits only because they have such a, they actually have a very large catalog. And to wrap this up, they are working on something. There's a new musical that was written in 2020. There is a cast recording for it. It's called Knoxville. This to me is very, again, like different from, their other shows, almost more like guitar heavy, where a lot of their stuff seems to be piano heavy. So a kind of like different sound, different. Almost when like Jason Robert Brown did like guitar for Bridges, like he ventured out and then came back. It did have a world premiere, I want to say a couple years ago. Cast recording came out in 2022. So it is, I believe, a work in progress, and maybe we'll hear more about it one day.
Absolutely. Also, they have a musical that's kind of been in development for a long time that I have been kind of following the development of. It's called Marie Dancing Still, and it is based on the sculpture that Edward Degas did of the little dancer of 14 years. Mm-hmm. And it had original production in 2014 and then another one in 2019. I love Degas' art. And so when I heard that they were doing this, I was excited. And Tyler Peck has always been involved. So that's another one of theirs that seems to kind of still be in development, maybe hasn't found its final home yet. So another one I'm watching out for of theirs.
Yeah. So they're still obviously like working together after 40 years. There was only a couple times that I think they strayed, and worked with other people, but is this our first duo? Oh no, we did Shaman and Whitman. I was like, is this our first composer duo? But no, it's not. But you did say that you would like to do a David Yazbek episode, so...
I did. While I was doing this, I was like, maybe we should do David Yazbek next.
What inspired that? What made you think of him?
I was thinking of The Band's Visit, and I don't know why, but I was thinking of The Band's Visit, and I was thinking of how... I was thinking about him and how I also feel that he can chameleon himself into so many different styles. You know, when you think about The Band's Visit, right? And then he followed it up with Tootsie. And I don't see a connecting thread anywhere there, but maybe I need to listen to them back to back to try and find that connecting thread. And I can't believe I'm going to subject myself to Tootsie for this.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But, or, you know, Woman on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown. Oh, you know what it was? I was thinking of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. That's actually the other one I was thinking of.
Mm-hmm. No, but it's so interesting because I don't know that you'll find that so thread different. Because even with this, like, I barely found that thread between these shows. So it is, like, super interesting to see these
people. They also have, he also has 5 musicals. And
we love that.
We love that.
We love that. Because we were talking about once doing, like, a Sondheim versus ALW episode, but they have so many shows. So it would have to be, like, top 3, bottom 3.
Yes, I think if we did Sondheim for this series or ALW, we'd have to, like we did for this, maybe pick in advance specific shows to
discuss. But we've also done many episodes on each of their shows individually, which is probably why we haven't done them. So
it feels such a vast project.
We are always looking for like new composers to dive into because I feel like during the pandemic, we were on a roll of like cast recording after cast recording, and now not so much. So it was nice to get to listen to like some older stuff while prepping for this.
Maybe next or after David Yazbek, what about like Dave Malloy? He doesn't have a huge catalog.
You know what? Maybe when Comet comes to Toronto is when we'll release
That's a really good idea. He has lots of
because everyone that's happening, we were told that it's happening.
Finally, again.
Crows is bringing it, which is very exciting.
Yeah, so I'd be interested in maybe looking into... And he was also just announced to be doing the music for The Witches musical.
I saw this. So I don't know that we need that, but I saw that.
No. I mean, we've been talking about Roald Dahl. You know, we've discussed. We've discussed that man.
Yeah.
But yeah, he might be someone interesting because for him, I feel like I hear him...
Agree.
...so clearly in everything he writes.
Yeah.
So yeah, and very interesting. Okay. Okay, I want to rank these 5 shows from top to bottom.
Let's rank. Or you rank.
Are you not going to rank them? I'm going to rank mine. Because I was thinking about this. Of these 5 that we listened to, I'm going to rank my favorite one, Once on This Island. Mm-hmm. My second favorite one, Ragtime. Mm-hmm. Then, Anastasia. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I really thought I really thought this bottom three was going to be different, but number three, Anastasia. Number four, Rocky.
That's wrong.
And number five is Seussical.
I would agree, except for Seussical,
Seussical offended me. I was offended.
I would listen to songs from Seussical again before I ever even typed the words Rocky into my phone.
The thing with Rocky is I could not find it on Spotify.
maybe that was helpful to you.
I had to be on YouTube. Like,
the whole thing is on YouTube. There's like 21 tracks. The whole thing was on YouTube.
So I listened to it on YouTube. So that
is our composer series on Aarons and Flaherty. And it's now time for our obsession of the week. Okay, Steph, what's your obsession?
Okay, my obsession, if you're from Toronto, you might know that the hit Broadway musical Hamilton is here.
Wow. Enough to be obsessed.
And I was lucky enough, our third member of the podcast, our silent co-host, Shara, won the lottery on the Hamilton app in Toronto. And I was lucky enough for her to take me as her
postman. I wasn't even asked. I'm kidding.
You weren't even asked. Okay, you already saw it this time, okay?
Sorry, let's just to expose our conversation of, like, Shara winning the Hamilton lottery. Shara's a nurse, so, like, this is... Schedules need to be changed in order to, like, see Hamilton.
Yeah, yeah.
Steph, always available. And me already seen it. And, like, we had discussed my thoughts on it. Cut to, like, 2 weeks later before you guys go. And Char's like, when are your tickets again? I'm like, we discussed this. I've already seen this show. Anyway, we did see very, like, different casts, though. Because I think whenever you go in Toronto, you're going to see someone different because this show's been on tour forever.
They're on the tail end of this tour. This is the last stop. I find Toronto gets a lot of last stops on the tour. So sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's not as nice, but I think it's good this time because it extended. It's going to end up being here for about 6 months. Mm-hmm. So hopefully I'll have a chance to go at least one more time. Their lottery is $10 Canadian, so it's like $8.50 American. Yeah. So, like, enter that lottery.
And also, like, do check the Rush tickets daily because you can get lucky. I've seen some, like, center orchestra seats, like, 10th row for $59.
Which is a great price. So
keep checking.
My obsession is, I've been lucky enough to see that this is my fourth time seeing Hamilton.
Is this your most seen show?
It became my most seen show. Congrats. When I saw it for the fourth time.
Welcome everything to else, the Four Timers, like, Club.
Everything else sits at three. Like, Wicked sits at three.
Actually, Book I think we've all seen it four times, right?
Seen it four times now.
I don't know if Shara's seen it four times because I can't remember if she saw it in 2020.
She did.
Oh, so she did. She was one of the last ones. We are the Four Timers Club.
We've all seen it four times now. Yes, this is my most seen show now, which is actually kind of crazy when you think about it. And what I have to say, my obsession is not the show in general, even though I do love it. When you're lucky enough to see a show this many times, you can watch different things. You can pay attention to different things. You can anticipate things that are happening. Yeah. And what I found myself watching this time was the choreography of Hamilton. As a former dancer, this is something that always interests me. But in Hamilton, I think the choreography takes such a wonderful tool that they use in storytelling. We have to shout out Andy Blankenbuehler, the choreographer. And what he does is, I don't want to use the word simple, mm-hmm. but it's very spare. Mm-hmm. You know, no one is, you know, doing a million pirouettes. No one's flipping. No one's holding their leg over their head. No one's doing tricks. It's simple movements to suggest against the lyrics. Some people don't like it. Some people find it quite literal against the lyrics. But I find it's very modern dance to me. And I think it works so well, especially because so much of the show is itself fighting against each other. You know, the costumes are fighting against the music, are fighting against, you know, their hairstyles, which is fighting against the style of performance. So there's all these things, like, in juxtaposition with each other to tell the story, and the choreography is just kind of another piece mm-hmm. of that. And I love how minimal it is. And I really think Annie Blankenbuehler created a dance language for this show that I have never seen in a show before or since. And I love that it's so unique to the show, and I think it works so well to tell the story. I absolutely love it.
It was interesting because when I saw it, same thing, I was also watching more of the ensemble than I think I ever have. So was my mom, because that was her third time seeing it. And we both were discussing on our way home that, like, the ensemble is always moving. No one is ever standing still. They're doing, like, a shoulder movement. They're moving their fingers. Yes. They're, like, doing something so, like,
Yes.
Minimal, but they're always moving, which I thought was so interesting.
Yes. I think, you know, I noticed when Hamilton is singing, they're moving so much more or so much faster. And a lot of times when Burr is singing, they're standing silent to the side or they're not on stage at all. And it represents, or they're doing different heads, and it represents kind of Hamilton, you know, being surrounded by this energy, these people, and Burr being isolated, being alone. Like, just the way that they're used mm-hmm. is so, so clever. I was like, you know, every puzzle piece of the show is wonderful, but when you kind of like take them apart and you examine each one individually,
yeah,
for this time, for me, what stood out was the choreography and the dancing, and I really, really loved it.
And also a one singular cast shout out: if you do not see Donald Weber as Aaron Burr, go back. I swear,
this wait for it was probably the best I've heard.
His room where it happens, I have like chills thinking about him right now. I like, if you do not see him, go back. I'm sure the understudy is like fantastic, yeah, but yeah, like go back to see him because he is top notch, the best. All right, my obsession this week. I've been watching Schmigadoon, and I feel like this is very different than like last year, because I actually hated season one of Schmigadoon, and it was the like golden era of musicals, which is like mm-hmm. not my favorite, but I think my biggest issue with the show was that they spent too much time making fun of musicals instead of just like embracing and living in the world, because they're just like living in this world. Whereas this season, we are not making fun of musicals. We are like celebrating them more than ever. This is also, I think, your favorite era of musicals. We're talking Cabaret, Chicago, Company, Sweeney Todd. It's Pippin. Like, it's all the like dark,
it's good stuff.
Fosse. And also, they're giving like our musical theater people more things to do. So like Dove Cameron is doing the most this season. Aaron Tveit doing the most. So my obsession of the week is actually from episode one of Schmigadoon. I think by the time this releases, everything will be out, so you can probably watch the entire thing, because it's only 6 episodes, which is too little for 30 minutes. Like, you could get through that really quick.
That's really quick.
Yeah. But my obsession of the week is Aaron's character Topher singing the song My Doorway to Where, which is a complete parody of Corner of the Sky from Pippin.
What am I supposed to be? Who is this guy called me? When will I see?
Has like maybe never sounded better. He's kind of playing a version of Pippin, Judas, Jesus, and Godspell. Is his name Claude from Hair?
Claude Berger.
Yeah.
Claude.
And I think that's it right now. They just sang another song on a episode that I just watched. It was Aaron and Dove singing a song that was what's the duet from Pippin with Pippin and Rachel Bay Jones?
Love song?
Yes, it was. Yeah. Sounded just like that. It was beautiful. Cinco Paul, who is the showrunner, is also doing all the music, and like props wow. to him, because these songs sound so good. I just saw a preview for the next episode where it sounds like Jesus Christ Superstar, and I love that score. But there was a moment of this past episode that Aaron was giving Judas, and I was here wow. for it. So I think Aaron's having fun. We haven't seen him like have fun in this way. He's playing like a hippie. He's wearing a horrible wig, but yeah. like he's having a good time. And his girlfriend Erica Hunter is in it too, still like front and center dancing up a storm.
Do they so film this in Vancouver still?
They do film in Vancouver, but I think that's also kind of like, it's very interesting that we're talking about like Aaron's and Flaherty and their different like styles, and also like this, because they're placing all of these like different musical styles right. and combining them into the same show. There's Emmy campaigns for Jane Krakowski, who's giving her best like Billy Flynn. So like, it's really amazing. Fun stuff this season. I highly recommend. But yeah, I'm like shocked at how good Aaron sounds and looks in this season of Schmigadoon. Yeah. So yeah, that's our obsession of the week. That's also our thoughts on Aaron's and Flaherty. If you've learned anything from this episode, it's to use 4 different color pens on everything that you're doing going forward. And maybe we'll also take that same advice. It's interesting stuff. But we are always looking for, as we said, new composers to dive into. So We would love to do more of these episodes in the future. But you can also listen to all of our previous composer series by composing to our podcast, by subscribing to our podcast anywhere you listen to your podcast. You can also watch us on YouTube, and don't forget to subscribe.
I believe you put together a playlist of all the composer series episodes on YouTube. So it's all in one place.
It is.
And you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Off2BOA Podcast with the number 2. And that's the best place you can reach us to let us know what you want to hear next.
And we will see you guys next time.
Bye.